Okay, so we are in Parshat Vayechi, which means we get to the end. The most notable part of the parsha, which we're going to spend, I think, most, if not all, the time on, is what we call the brachot. We've noted over the years, that it doesn't necessarily seem to be full of brachot or blessings as much as it gets its reputation for. And there's a challenge with it, and the challenge is that it's written in a language which is somewhat challenging, or I'll put it differently, maybe somewhat poetic. And just in order to get a little bit ahead of myself, so I think some of you know that whenever I get to something which is more poetic, so what we want to really look at is unculus, because unculus under normal circumstances translates word for word, is very literal, and tells us what the words mean. But when it comes to something which is poetic, he does the same thing. He tells us what it means, but as opposed to what it says. So therefore, he's literal when things are straightforward, and he says what it says. But when it's poetic, then again, he's non-literal, and he tells us what it means, and therefore there creates some sometimes really interesting subtexts. So with that, we'll begin. V'yikra Yaakov el banav, v'yomer ha'asvu v'agida lachem et asher yikra etchem b'achrit hayamim. So Yaakov gathers his children, he's on his deathbed, and he tells them, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen at the end of days. Now, sometimes we get holed up on this because there is an approach in Chazal, which is brought down by the classical Mefarshim, and that is that Yaakov wanted to say something and ended up saying something else. So I just want to point out that in the text itself, there's no reason to say that. He gathers them together and he says, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen at the end of days. And the question is, what does the end of days mean? Does Achrit Yamim, does it mean what's going to happen when you go into Eretz Yisrael? Which, by the way, can work very well. Does it mean what's going to happen, you know, the time of Mashiach, which then maybe he doesn't say things about it, although maybe he does. So let's just leave that, whether there is what we can call a bait and switch, that he says, I'm going to do one thing and does something else, which is kind of what Rashi indicates, is not 100% clear when you read the psukim themselves. Hikavtsu v'shimu b'nei Yaakov v'shimu Yisrael avichem. So again, this more poetic sense or style is really jumps off of the text. Reuven b'chori ata kochi v'reshit oni yeter se'ed v'yeter oz pachas kemayim al totar ki alita mishkave avicha. So what exactly is it that he says to Reuven? So again, if we go straight to our Targum Onkelos, he adds something in which we did not know when we read the text. In source 2, Reuven Bechoriat, so that's pretty straightforward. Reuven Bechoriata. Chele v'resh tokfi lach, which again works pretty well. Kochi v'reshit ani. But when he gets to Yeter Se'et v'Yeter Oz, there he adds in something else. Hava chazi lemesav tlata chulkin. You were worthy to have received three different portions. B'cheruta, kehunata, kehunta, umalchuta. You should have been the firstborn, you should have been the Kohen, and you should have been the Melech. Now, I don't want to argue with Onkelos, but I do want to ask two things. One is, well, how do you know that? Which means, what makes you say that he should have had, you know, all of those things? You know, sometimes you do need a checks and balances, and you do need a division of power. So why would we suspect that over here there was originally not supposed to be a division, there was not supposed to be checks and balances, and instead Reuven was supposed to be the beneficiary of all of Yaakov's blessings, and he should have had, the as the firstborn, that would indicate a double portion, and he should have been the Kohen, and he also should have been the Melech. So the Kohen, in a sense, is easy, because we're told that prior to the Levium receiving to be the Kohenim and the Levium, so before Shevet Levi gets elevated, then the people who served and the people who were the Kohanim were the firstborn. So the Bechora and the Kohuna, I think, really could go together in an easier way. But of course, I'm not doing anything which is necessarily based on anything in Bereshit. Rather, what I'm doing is I'm using some information which I know further on in Shmot and then reading it back into Bereishit and assuming that what happens later should have happened over here as well. And we do that occasionally. We read it into a number of earlier sections. We read the Yaakov and Esav argument, or not even argument, when Yaakov purchases the Bechorah. So one of the things that the commentaries point out, what did he get? He got the right to be the Kohen. Why? Because that's what goes along with being the Bechorah. I already noted in passing that being the Bechorah can have something else, and that's the double portion. So of course now you can accuse me of not having a Shemot read of Bereishit, but rather having a Devarim read of Bereishit, where we see the firstborn getting a double portion. But either way, that part is easier. Now, the second thing is, I would love to see where we're getting it out of the Psukim, meaning where did the Pasuk say this? And then, but the third part, the Malchuta, where did we see that he was supposed to be the Melech? So that becomes a little bit more difficult to put Reuven as the Melech. I will remind you that at some point when we looked at the thing which it says that Reuven did, and that is that he climbs upon the bed of his father, which clearly relates to the episode of Bilha. So there, the way the Torah phrased it is that he climbs on the bed of Bilha, who is Pilegish Aviv. I mean, later on we find that Yosef treats the children of Bil and Zilpah, Nishe Aviv, as being the wives, so there was a different perspective between at least Reuven, maybe all of Bnei Leah, and Yosef, how to look at these women, to look at Bilha and Zilpah. But if he has the attitude that she is a Pilegesh, then maybe we can say that what Reuven does is he takes a page out of the Adoniyahu playbook, or maybe Adoniyahu took a page out of the Reuven playbook, which would be unfortunate because it didn't work out that well for Reuven. And by the way, it doesn't work out that well for Adoniyahu. And that is that he tries to get his father to give him his Pilegesh, David, to give him his Pilegesh in order for him to be able to lay a claim to be the one who will take over. And that's the way that Bathsheba reads it, that he's trying to declare himself as king, and part of the point is he's taking the Pilegesh from the king. So therefore, maybe I can read that into the whole Reuven episode, that he's trying to establish himself as king. But you do realize I worked a little bit hard in order to say that. That doesn't mean it's not true. I'm just saying that I had to work a little bit hard to make that, to create that association. But there may be something else over here, and let's go and take a look at the psukim themselves, and let's look at Rashi in source 3. Yeter se'et re'ur yitil yot yeter alachicha bikahuna lashon nesi utapayim. So he hears the word yeter se'et like the word nesiut kapayim. Now, some of you can say, well, that's a bit of a stretch, and some of you can say, okay, that made sense. V'yeter oz b'malchut. Kimo, as it says, v'yitain oz l'malcho. U'mi garam l'cha lafsid kol eile, and that was because of Reuven's subsequent behavior. Although, okay, so we'll leave it at this. You know, the Targum clearly speaks about the Bechorah and the Kohuna and the Malchut. The Bechorah, as we know, especially if we explain it the way that I did, is this double portion that gets taken away from Reuven and that moves over to Yosef, as we'll spend some time with hopefully moving forward. And the Kohuna, we don't know who gets moved over. I know you're going to all tell me you do know, and you say it gets moved over to Levi, but again, my point is at this particular juncture, we don't see where it goes to. The Malchut, that we will see. The Malchut will go to Yehuda, and that will be the thing which perhaps is the most clear over here. But the Kohuna, you know, to read that in over here is really somewhat mysterious. I would, however, suggest that maybe reading the psukim again, what brought Onkelos to say this is pshat? What is he seeing over here? To say that Onkelos just has a mesorah, you could say it, but generally, I'm going to say it again. He wants to tell us what it says, right? What does the pasuk say? And right again, what does it mean? And he's not being literal over here. It could be that the word chilalta lechalel, the word lechalel is probably the inverse of Kedusha. So therefore, it's not just that by Alita, Mishkavei Avicha, as chilalta yutziyala. So it could be that what that's understood as, you created a chilul instead of kedusha, and at that point you are unworthy to be a kohen. Now again, you don't have to go that far. You could have said, no, that's not what it means. What it means is that you lost the right to be the firstborn because you did not behave in a responsible way. And, you know, one of the things about the firstborn, one of the Mefarshim points is, I think it's Rabbeinu Bachaye, describes the firstborn as a quasi-father, something between the father and the son. He's the one who has the responsibility for all the younger siblings. So in a sense, he says that the double portion he receives is payment for all of the care that he gets. It's the babysitting money that you never pay your own kids. It's the money that he's getting for the work that he has done and taking that responsibility. So now if I look at the family and I say, okay, now who is really the one who took care of the siblings? So you could make an argument for Reuven, although he fails, right? He fails. You know, he does step up and he does take responsibility for Yosef and don't kill him, put him in the pit instead, which was not a wonderful plan. It did not work out the way that he imagined it would work out. So I can say that, you know, he steps up and later on when he tries to take responsibility again, he says to his father, you know, if I don't do this well, then, you know, you can kill my two kids. So that doesn't seem to be a very stable response. On the other hand, you know, you could say Yehuda takes responsibility, especially in the whole episode with Binyamin. But the one who really takes responsibility for everybody is Yosef. Yosef is the one who gives them food and takes care of them and takes care of all of their needs, and he becomes a quasi-father for them. Now, it could be they don't love that relationship. It could be that they're going to resent that relationship, but you still can't deny that relationship. Moreover, when Yosef is described as far as his relationship with Paro, you also have similar things. He says, you know, God may be a father for Paro. He's called Avreich. He's called Evin Yisrael, which is Av Uben. Yosef is, and Kabbalistically, he's considered to be, if the three Avot are considered to be the three wheels of the Merkava, Yosef is considered to be the fourth wheel of Merkava, although some of my Kabbalistic friends here can say, no, ultimately David is, and that's the Midah of Malchut, but let's leave the Kabbalistic discussion, because at least from a Bereshit perspective, Yosef is really the continuation. Eila Toldot Yaakov, Yosef. Yosef is the continuation. Yosef functions as an older brother, which is ironic because he's younger than the rest. He's the Ben Zakunim, and maybe some of these elements we'll come back to, but Reuven loses the status of the Bechor, so now I can say a Bechor has Kedusha, but again, I'm guilty now of you using a Sefer Shemot read on it. Why does a Bechor have Kedusha? Because of Makat Bechorot. At that point, you need to do a Pidyon HaBen for the Bechor, which means the over here, this language of Az Chilalta, you created a Chilul. You took something which was Kodesh and made it non-Kodesh. I told you, I could read it into the Bechor aspect, but it's much easier to read that into the Kohen aspect. And I'm saying, what took Unkelos and then Rashi and others to say, oh, Reuven should have been the Kohen and he loses it. So yes, we have the Shmot aspect of knowing that the firstborn is going to be the Kohen, but we also have on top of this word over here, Az Chilalta, so therefore it could be reading the Chilul as an inverse of Kedusha. So maybe that's the diuk that they felt and why they felt that this reading was compelling. So what we have is Reuven having losing it. We can also look at the Datskein and Balei HaTosfot. Reuven Bechoriata Reuven Yitili Tol Pishnayim Bechor. So again, he's having the Sefer Dvorim read on it to get the double portion. V'gam HaKohuna Haituri Liyot Lecha Lefi Shavoda B'Bechorot V'gam HaMalchut Ki HaMalchut Reuven LeBechor. So yes, within a family of kings, then the one who should inherit should be the firstborn. And by the way, that's not as simple as it sounds. I'll come back to the second. Gedamor ve'etam amalchanatan liyoram ki hu habachor v'lo zechita liyot habachora lecha v'natata liyosef akona lelevi v'amalchut liyuda. Right? Hu dechtiv uv'chalilo yutzoi avav. Nabachor liyosef. So again, he's not reading it exactly the way I wanted to, but he's reading that word. Umigaram lecha lefi shepachazta kamayim. Right, you were pachaz kemayim ki kitona nishpach v'lo utar lecha klum rak haminyan shematchil la'olam meruvein. Whenever we start enumerating the tribes, we always seem to start with Reuven, but that's all that remained. He is technically the first one who's born, but he's not really the firstborn, as it were. What I kind of glazed over and didn't speak about over here as much as perhaps we could have. So again, I want to read it one more time and maybe read it more carefully. So the Pishtaim of the Bechorah, that seems to be what Yosef gets over here. So that becomes clear. The Kunaya Lefisha Avodah B'Vcharot. As I said, that's something we only find out later. V'gama Malchut, the Malchut goes to the Bechor. Now, I'm not going to go into a whole discussion, certainly not a whole halachic discussion on this point. But if you read the Rambam, which I did not bring, but if you read the Rambam in terms of who inherits the kingdom, the Rambam says something which is very much a qualifier. He says that the son of the king, who's the firstborn, not that he automatically becomes king, but he becomes king if he is ra'ui to become king. Which means if he's not ra'ui to become king, it's not an accident of birth, automatically make somebody. It's something where someone has to decide. That itself becomes a very interesting point, who decides? So apparently it's the Sanhedrin who decides. And how do they decide? They decide it based upon voting. So therefore, as much as we imagine that kingship is based upon absolute order of birth and the king's older son will be king, when one reads the Rambam carefully in Hilchot Melachim, one could get to a very different understanding that on the one hand there is a part of it which may be democratic, of course democratic based upon very select few who get to vote, but there also seems to be a question of who is worthy to be king. And it's not unqualified. So therefore, I could easily say that, again, maybe that's exactly what this is telling me. Reuven, you should have been king had you been worthy. Meaning, the default should have been, but you weren't worthy. And maybe that's exactly the point over here. You're not worthy, so therefore, you lose it. Now, again, there's another problem here, which we're kind of ignoring. But Reuven should only be king if he is the son of a king, and therefore he's inheriting the kingship. But if Yaakov's not a king, and we have no reason to call Yaakov a king, right? These are the kings in Esav before there was a king in Israel. So Yaakov's not a king, so why should Reuven be a king? It's that kind of, we can go back to the Kohen. Why do you want to be a Kohen? Well, my father was a Kohen, my grandfather's a Kohen. Well, why do you want to be king? My father, no, they weren't king. Your father wasn't the king, and your grandfather wasn't the king. So therefore, why do you think that you have the right to be king? So that's why I'm pointing out again that this default that Reuven should have been king because he should have inherited as firstborn is not as simple as we're putting it. But nonetheless, as I said, that's what Onkelos is reading. The challenge then is to go back and read the words and say, hold it, where did Onkelos get that? Why does he think that that's what it says here in the text? So as I said, I made my suggestion, at least how you can read some of this. What's interesting is that when we get to Levi, Shimon and Levi over here in Bereshit, there is absolutely nothing positive about this, to the extent that you would almost, except for maybe one thing, not even say that there was a blessing here. Shimon v'Levi achim, pasuk hey, kalei chamas micharet. And now it talks about their anger or their poor impulse controls when it comes to their anger. Yaakov does not seem to be very positive or giving them a blessing. What is he referring to? The simple read of all of this is that he is referring to what happened in Shechem. They go in, although it says they killed a person. And we wonder if Uvritzanan Ikrushor actually is referring to Yosef, but Yosef is not referred to as a shore in Bereshit. He's only referred to as a shore in Devarim. I know you can look it up and you can be easily fooled, but he's not called a shore in Bereshit, so therefore it would be strange that that really is referring to Yosef. I'll just get way ahead of myself for a moment, but if you look at when the Targum explains that verse, Ikrushor, he does not explain it as being Yosef. So the only positive thing, perhaps, is the very end. I will divide them, which means Shimon and Levi together, they're going to get into trouble. Maybe this is also the Midrashic understanding that of why specifically Yosef took Shimon and he put Shimon in prison. That he knew that the two of them together are hotheads and could do all kinds of silly things. So there, but it's interesting that he separates them, which is really what Yaakov is explaining over here. He separates them, but he lets Levi, you know, stay with the group, and he separates Shimon. That Shimon is separate, and Shimon is taken away, and therefore maybe Shimon is really the problematic one over here. And there's a lot more to talk about in Shimon, but I will again note, as everyone hopefully knows, that if you look in source number 5, and these are the brachot of Moshe, which absolutely should be compared to the brachot of Yaakov, Yechi Ruvain Ba'al Yamut V'hi Metav Mispar. So something positive, not too positive. Reuven, let him survive, let him live, and so on. Vizot Yudav Yomashma Hashem Kol Yudav Elamot V'enu Yadav Rav Lo V'ezim Mitzarav Tiyah. Now, it didn't also say all that much about Yehuda compared to what we're going to see Yaakov's blessing for Yehuda, but I really want to focus on Shimon and Levi. So you notice the order gets changed, and Reuven is first, and then Yehuda. What you may not note is that Shimon's not here at all. Shimon completely disappears from Moshe's brachot, which is interesting and maybe disturbing. But then he goes straight to Levi, but it's no longer Shimon and Levi; it's just Levi. With Levi Amar to Mecha Vorecha Leish Chasidecha, and over here we start talking about the Urim and the Tum and Tumim and so on, and Yeru Mishpatecha LeYaakov V'Taratcha LeYisrael. And so on. Yisimu Ketorah Ba'apecha V'Kalil Al Mizbechecha. So it's also interesting, the Arur Apecha over here, the Ketoret, and the meaning Levi gets rehabilitated. That's what's interesting. Levi gets rehabilitated and Shimon disappears. So then I have to say that maybe there was a bracha that Yaakov had given. What was the bracha? Achal Kein Bi Yaakov, Afitzein Bi Yisrael. I'm going to separate the two of them. And that gets turned into a bracha. But other than that, and maybe again you can accuse me of working too hard in order to get to that point of being able to rehabilitate Levi, but that's only by getting rid of Shimon, and therefore, in a certain sense, Shimon is still locked up in Yosef's prison, and he doesn't show up in the brachot over here. Now, of course, one of the things that we should do is track all of the episodes throughout Sefer Bamidbar, especially in the book of Bamidbar, and take a look wherever Shimon is on the wrong side, so then I think we can find a number of them, and the most notably, perhaps, could be in the story of Cosby and Zimri, where Zimri is from Shimon, and maybe that's where we have this major rebellion, and maybe it's at that point where Moshe decides, like maybe Moshe's mother said to him, if you have nothing nice to say about somebody, then don't say anything. And he goes, okay, there goes Shimon, because there's nothing to say about him. But it is really, you know, interesting and disturbing that he gets marginalized like this. He gets taken away and he's not part of the discussion. He's not part of the family. So as I said, that is interesting. Esti's asking me, doesn't Yaakov call Yosef sure in his bracha alei sure? As I said, you're going to get fooled. So you got fooled. You got fooled. There's a difference between a sure and a sure. So there is, right? So take a look carefully. It doesn't mean sure there. Alei sure means they climbed over the wall. Right. Maybe they didn't teach you that in whatever Beis Yaakov you went to. And there it says that the girls found Yosef so attractive, they were climbing over the walls to try to see him. Harry had probably learned that as a kid. But you know, your silence, I don't hear it. But that's what that pasuk means. Again, take a look at Rashi. But it doesn't say sure. It says sure. Sorry, not sure, sure. So take a look over there, because it's two different words and really close. And maybe it's too close. Maybe it's so close that we should be suspicious. But I'll say it again. Yosef's only referred to as a bull when we get later on to Sefer Devarim, and it is not a Bereshit perspective, which maybe doesn't bother you at all. What bothers you? Which finally takes us over to Yehuda. Yeah, so you have to work really hard on that. But especially you need to use Moshe's shore, because he does say that in Devarim. Again, if you're not clear about that, we can look back at Devarim. Again, we just now skipped Yehuda, which I didn't want to do. But if you look at Pasuk Yud Gimel, first of all, it's interesting that Binyamin comes first. So you notice the word Shechina a couple of times. And yes, the Beit HaMikdash, the first and second, will be in Binyamin's territory. And you see the word Shechina over here. So it's interesting that Binyamin and the Beit HaMikdash are there. Again, if Sinat Chinam destroys the Beit HaMikdash, Binyamin becomes the rallying point of unity among all the brothers. So therefore, that becomes the proper place for the Beit HaMikdash to stand. So that seems to make a lot of sense. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Uli Yosef Amar, Mivorechet Hashem Artso, Mimeged Shemayim Mital, Umitomer Vetzatachat, Umimeged Tvoat Shemesh, Umimeged Garesh Yerachayim, Umirosh Harare Kedem, Umimeged Gvot Olam, Umimeged Eretz Mola, Veritzon Shochne Se, Tivu Otal, Lerosh Yosef, Lukokod Nizir Echav, Bechor Shoro Hadurlo, Vekarno Reim Karnav, Behema Mimian Yenageach Yachtav, Now, without explaining one word over here, notice that Yosef gets the richest bracha, which means it's just a lot more developed than you look at Reuven's, you look at even Yehuda's, and it's really interesting. Levi gets a longer bracha, Binyamin is short, but Yosef gets a very rich bracha. The other thing which is really interesting here is this point about L'rosh Yosef L'lokod Kod Nizir Echav, that it almost sounds there that on Yosef's head there is still a crown, and that would be interesting because isn't Yosef not a king? Now, Yosef may have been the first king, and Yosef may have been the one who introduced the concept of kingship among the Jewish people, even though we can argue whether he was a Jewish king or he was a king who was Jewish. Well, he wasn't really king, but he was Jewish, but he wasn't really the king of the Jews. So all this is interesting, but L'rosh Yosef L'kodkod Nizir Achav, but the word Nizir is what's also interesting, because the Nizir is connected to the head, to the hair, and you know, you go back and you look at the Rosh again, U'mirosh harekedem, and we're not really sure, L'rosh Yosef, right? Nazir Echav. So the Nazir is connected also to the hair, but it's also a Nazir is somebody who may actually be set off from the people somewhat. So is this about Yosef's isolation? Is this Yosef's ascendancy over the others? Is because of Yosef's greatness? Is this about a crown on his head? So I'm saying all of this is really quite challenging. And by the way, in the Israeli army, when you're talking over the kesher, over the walkie-talkie, the kodkod is the captain. Well, the kodkod nizir achav. So it's interesting that word actually seems to indicate some kind of leadership. And again, Yosef seems to have a lot in Moshe's blessing. But I'll just say in general terms that Moshe is very appreciative of Yosef, and Moshe takes responsibility to take Yosef out of Egypt. And there may be a lot more to the Moshe and Yosef relationship. But we, as I said, we got ahead of ourselves because we wanted to read over here more about Yehuda. So we're back in the first source and we're up to Yehuda now. Yehuda ata yaducha achecha yodcha ba'orif ayvecha yishtachavu lecha b'nei avicha. So I don't know how easy you found that pasuk. I know you got the end of it, that the others will be bowing down to. It's going to now focus on the power, especially the using the imagery of a lion. Gur Aryeh Yehuda miteref b'ni alita kara ravatz ka'aryeh ukelavi miyikmenu lo yosor shevet miyuda, which is much clearer that the scepter will not depart from Yehuda mechokik mi ben raglav, and the rule, being the ruler, being the leader, creating the laws ad kiyavo shilo v'lo yikatamim. Now, whatever the word shilo means over here, that's also going to create some challenge. Osri legefen iro ulasroko b'nei atono ki beis b'yayin levusho uvadam anavim suto. Now, aside from being quite poetic and having even some rhyme there, I think we are a little challenged. And that's the blessing. So Yehuda gets a very long, developed elements are here to it. We have wine at the end. We have leadership in the middle, and we have power there in the beginning. And again, here is a blessing. We can argue Reuven doesn't seem to be blessed. Shimon and Levi don't seem to be blessed. Maybe Levi got something over there. Yehuda is being blessed. So therefore, especially if I, you know, push away Reuven, I push away Shimon and push away Levi, so then almost by default, the next one is Yehuda. But that itself is not strong enough. But there is a lot here about Yehuda, which we need to understand. So you're going to have to give me a little bit of time to come back. But first, I want to go over to Yosef, because Yosef also gets a long developed bracha. Ben Parat Yosef. Now, what does the word parat mean? What is the idea of ben parat Yosef, ben parat Elenayim? So notice those letters, notice this word, and I'll just throw out for the moment that maybe parat is related to the idea of peru or revu. Maybe it is related to this idea of becoming numerous, ben parat Yosef, ben parat Elenayim, but note tzada aleshor. So those are the girls that are climbing up the walls to take a look at him, because he was in fact so good looking, so ben parat Yosef. But you have people who are mad at him, people who try to shoot the arrows at him. Now this is taken in many ways, and we're going to keep it to a G-rated understanding, but he pulls back the bow and he holds back his arrows. Miyad Avir Yaakov Mishamura Evan Yisrael. So the Evan Yisrael is what I referred to earlier as the Av and the Ben, but he has this interesting, perhaps double status. May El Avicha Vyazraka Ve'et Shaddai Vivrachacha Vivrachacha Brichot Shamayim Me'al Brichot Tahom Rivetatachat Brichot Shaddaim Viracham. So just in case you were not clear about that Pru Revu and this issue of fertility, Yosef absolutely gets blessed. I don't know any way of saying this in a stronger way, that he's being blessed from above, but he's being blessed from below. He's being blessed by blessings of the breasts and the womb. These are blessings of fertility, which means that Yosef is going to be plentiful. Brachot avicha gavrua brachot harai, atavat gavot olam, tiyena l'rosh Yosef, ulakot kod nizir echav. So you see now that element that Moshe identified is back over here as well in Yaakov's blessing. But he, again, this leadership is there, but we still have to now work out the difference between Yosef and the difference between Yehuda, but let's, you know, first spend a little bit more time with Yosef and then we'll move back to Yehuda. When we go in source number 6, which precedes this, I mean, we started today in Perek Memtet, which is where the quote-unquote brachot are, but if you go to Perek Memchet, Yosef already receives brachot over there. And this is when Yosef is called in first. And it's really at this point that Yosef gets his double portion. Vayomi Yaakov al Yosef, Kel Shaddai. Now, the name Shaddai is important because the name Shaddai is used. I'm not going to prove it now, but I've said it before. I've written about it. I've shown it. The name Shaddai is used when it comes to fertility. The first time it's used in the Torah is when Avram is told to get a Brit Milah, and Avram's 99, and then Avram afterwards has Yitzchak. That every time it is somehow connected to fertility, to children coming to the world, children staying in the world, but it has to do with fertility. And maybe even the word Shaddai is connected to the word breast, but it has some kind of ability of divine, some divine powers flowing. So maybe, again, it's like the milk flowing from the breast, but it is something which is a power of God which allows blessing to take place. Again, very specifically in terms of children, and Yaakov says, El Shaddai Nerei Lai Beluz Beretz Kanan V'Rechoti. By the way, look at the blessing. The blessing was for children. But Yom Elai, what does God say? Hineni mafricha v'rbiticha, pru revu. So that the name Shaddai is connected to this. And Yaakov continues, and he tells him, So now he is saying that a blessing is coming to them, but I also want you to note something else. And that is, like from the beginning, I pointed out that Ben Porat Yosef, and you have the v'herbiticha, and you have the idea of peru uravu, and you have the name Ephraim, which I'll come back to, and moving on, you have Ephrata. All of these things are connected, and that's part of what we need to pay attention to. So these two are becoming tribes. It means Yosef just received his double portion. Yosef is not a tribe. Yosef is a tribe. He's something else. Yosef is somehow between the brothers and Yaakov, which again is the role of the older brother. The older brother is the extension of the father. He's the one who looks after the others and gets the double portion. Yosef over here is being given the double portion. And now Yaakov explains something because he's going to ask Yosef for a favor. Vaniba v'ui b'mipatan meta alai Rachel b'eretz Kanan ba'od kivrat eretz levo Ephrata. So now again, Ephrat v'ekvar Hashem v'derech Ephrat hi be'lachem. V'yar Yisrael b'nei Yosef v'yom mi'eila v'yom Yosef v'laviv v'nai him v'sh natan ilu kim bazeh v'yomar kachem na elai v'avarchem. So now he's going to bless them. V'nei Yisrael kavdu mizokin lo yichal erot, which is reminiscent, I wrote in source number 7, when Yitzchak wants to give his blessings when he cannot see well. V'yageisho tamelav, v'yishaklem, v'yichabeklem, v'yom Yisrael Yosef, v'open echelo pelalti. I never even imagined to pray to see your face again. V'nei ra'oti elokim gam etzerecha. And I've even seen your children, v'yotze Yosef otamim brekav, v'yishtachu lapav arza. Again, I'm not sure how much to go into it, but v'yavorech et Yosef v'yomar Elokim asher yitachu avotai. Just one second. Lefanav Avram Yitzchak v'lkim arayotim yodi ad yom hazeh hamalach ha'goelotim mikorai yivarech atinarim v'rekrem shmi v'shem otai Avram Yitzchak v'yidgu l'rov v'keretz aretz. Again, it's this blessing for many children. And we will leave it at that. So we already pointed out that source number 6 is when the blessings go over to Yaakov, but again, it comes from Yitzchak, whose vision is limited, and now we have a similar scene over here, which we may or may not have paid attention to. Okay. I mentioned before that Yosef was called Avrech, and that is in source 8 in Pasuk Mem Gimel, but I want to read a little bit before this. This is when he is selected, really, as no longer being a slave, and he is appointed in his role as king. V'yasar paro tabato me'al yado v'itein oto yad Yosef v'yalbesh oto bigde shesh v'yasem revod hazahav al tzavaro. Now, the word Rachav and the word Merkevet HaMishnah and the word Avrech, so we've learned this before, yes, and the word Bechor, all of them are made up of the same letters. They're all made up of the Bet and the Kaf and the Resh, which is all the second in the single digits, the second in the tens, and the second in the hundreds, which really is who Yosef is. Yosef is always the number 2. Yosef was number 2 to Yaakov, he's number 2 to Potiphar, he's number 2 in the prison, and he's number 2 to Paro. And the brothers always assumed that he wanted to be number 1 wherever he was, and they never understood that he was always number 2. And that ultimately is the role of Mashiach ben Yosef, to prepare the way for Yehuda, okay, or Mashiach ben David. But over here, part of what we should note is the berech as well. The bowing down is part of this. It's the Merkava that I mentioned before, that he's the fourth wheel. It is the bracha, and it is the bechora. All of this is involved in one way or another involving Yosef. So I'm just pointing out that in these couple of psukim, where Yosef is given his role in Egypt, all of these elements are there staring at us. The other thing is the name Ephraim. V'etshem ha'sheni kara Ephraim ki hifreini elokim ba'aretz anyei. So again, this name of Ephraim and this idea of blessing having to do with Yosef is also interesting. When Yosef is named, Rachel does something very similar, and she names him and says, Yosef Hashem li ben acher. Again, looking for more children, looking for more fertility, looking for there to be a continuation and more blessing later on when Binyamin is born. So maybe, again, we didn't notice this, but we should have put it together already. So, this is source 10, v'yis'umi beit el v'yihi od kivrat eretz levo Ephrata. So Ephrata is this place. So what is it? It's this place where the Peru, where it takes place. So therefore, her prayer from before, I want another son. So here it is. So that's, again, interesting. And then we come back to this idea of Ephraim getting the blessing. So I'm going to say it again now. Yosef's blessing over here, if we're going to, again, look at the bigger picture of his blessing, there's no kahuna. And there's no kingship, even though it was all there in the background, and we were ready for it, but it's not there. But what is there is blessing, and is double, and triple, and so on, and that he gets this double blessing should not be a surprise, because that seems to be, you know, all over this essence of Yosef seems to be this blessing of more, of Pruvu, of this Riboy, and so on. And Yosef, as I said, ends up getting this double blessing. Okay, so at this point, we're finally ready to get back to Yehuda, and now let's try to understand Yehuda's blessing. Because there's something over here which takes place that I think is really interesting, but let's read it one more time, and then we're going to cheat and read it in English. Maybe we'll look at Rashi a little bit, and then we'll go to the Targum. Yehuda, back in source number one, Pasachet, Yehuda ata yoducha achecha. Right, so we remember all of these things: the power of the lion, Gori Yehuda, and so on. Right, Ravatskar Aryeh, Ukalavi, Lo Yosor Shevim Yehuda. The probably the most difficult part is when you get to the end of this. Osri la gefen iro ulasrika bnei atono kabes bayayin levusho uvadam anavim suto. Like, what is it talking? Yeah, we see wine. And some of us like wine, so some of us very much appreciate this, but we just don't know what to do with it. So again, what is this last element over here about Yehuda having to do with wine? So we'll look at Rashi. Rashi will start with source number 12, Osri Legefen Iro, Nitnabe al Eretz Yehuda, Shdehem Moshechet Yayin Kim Ayan. That so much wine is going to flow over there, it's going to be a place of wine. Now, again, no one diminish that. That is a wonderful thing, that we're going to have good wine. Like, we like good wine, and that's great. But we're just kind of wondering if that's all that's here. Ish Yehuda, Yasur legefen ir achad, v'yotainu begefen achad, u'misarek achad ben aton echad. And, you know, again, we can read Kabes Bayayin, Kozel Loshon Ribor Yayin. So it's interesting. Yosef gets the bracha of Ribor in terms of children. He gets the bracha in terms of his vineyards. Suta Loshon Min Begedhu. Ve'en lo Dimyon Bamikra. That it's a kind of a clothing, Rashi understands, and doesn't appear in other places. So, you know, reading all of this, we're not really sure what exactly we're supposed to do. But Rashi does, Osri, come on, Oser Dugmato, Mikimimi Afredol, Hayoshev Bishmai Mechain Bnei Otono, Kinyanze, for Onkelos, and now he knows Onkelos, Tergem Bimelech HaMashiach, Gefenem Yisrael, Irazi Yushalayim, Sorka Elu Yisrael. So he notes that the Targum takes this in a totally other place, where essentially Rashi sounds very tempted just to leave it in terms of, okay, he's going to have lots of wine, he's going to have vineyards, and nobody knock vineyards because, as I said, this sounds like a very good thing. So let's go down. We'll skip a little bit, and you see what a favor I'm doing to you. Look at source 16. By the way, this is not a classical rabbinic source. Well, we can debate that as well. Kaves v'yayin levusho, Pirish Ravim ben Ezra, mi rov ha'yayin yichabsu levusheim b'yayin tachat mayim. They have so much wine that they're going to use it to launder their clothing. Is there anybody here who's ever done laundry who likes this interpretation? Are you about to accuse the Ibn Ezra of never doing laundry himself? Because this does not work well. And that's what he writes here. Aval ein tov lechabes bayayin. Rak hamayim tovim. Water works on laundry. Wine does not work well. The kol shekein dam anavim. She'einim milavnin elim adimim. They don't make things white. They make things red. So how can you tell me that this is a question of doing laundry with wine? Because that doesn't make much sense. So again, just go back a second to what the Psukim said. And then again, you'll see why we are somewhat stuck when it said, right, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Osri l'gefen iro, l'sirka b'ni asano, ki beis b'yayin levusho. Uvedam anavim suto. So levusho, levush is clothing. Suto, you know what? You could say it's a word that doesn't exist, or you can say it's like sut, it's like clothing. But either way, it says kabes b'yayin levusho, uvedam anavim suto. So you're doing laundry with wine, and I hope everyone is saying, yeah, that was a really good point. That doesn't work very well. What in the world do these psukim actually mean? Good. So Are we good? We understood Yosef's bracha. We understood what happened to Reuven. We understand that Shimon and Levi may have not gotten a blessing unless you separate them. And then somehow Levi is going to evolve into Levi. And we read a lot of about Yehuda. Again, we read Yosef, again, all this fertility. And then we read about Yehuda, and he gets power, and he gets kingship, and the scepter, and he gets laundry done with wine, which does generally is why you need to do laundry, not how you do laundry, right? If you're with me on this. So now I want to go over to the Targum, and we'll try to figure some of this out. The Targum, source 17, on Yehuda. And just to help us a little bit, the English translation of the Torah is in 18. Yehuda, you, your brothers, will acknowledge your hand, Yehudi Yotcha Achecha, right? Yehuda, you, your brothers, will acknowledge your hands at the nape of your enemies. Your brothers will bow down to you. So now, let's take a look what the Targum writes. Yehuda, at odita. Yehuda, you confessed. That's really interesting. And we're not ashamed. V'lo bihitatita. Bach, yudin echach. And your brothers will acknowledge you. He just added a clause in. The clause he added in is that Yehuda, you confessed. Now this works in wonderfully with things that we know, that maybe Yehuda becomes Yehuda. Well, actually, this will depend. What is it that he confessed to? Did he confess? And this is really intriguing. Did he confess to his part in the sale of Yosef? Mm-hmm. Did he confess to Tamar? That's the easier read on it, but that's what the Targum is reading into it. Let's continue. Tetkaf al balei devavcha, right? We'll read the English of the Targum. You confess and you are not ashamed. Your brothers will acknowledge you and you will overpower your enemies. Your haters will be dispersed. They will turn the back. They're next to you. Your father's sons will greet you first. Now, this is also interesting because it's not exactly what it said. And again, what did the Chumash say over here? It didn't say that they'll greet you first. It actually said something much stronger. So it's interesting that he softened it. When we get to Yehuda, it said, Yishtachavu lecha b'nei avicha. Yishtachavu means they'll bow down to you. Of course, when Yosef has his dreams of people bowing down to him, we did not love it all that much, or the brothers didn't love it all that much, but he's pulling away from that. And look at the Targum, instead of Yishtachavu, end of Pasuk Ched, and it says, L'mish'al b'shloma b'nei avuch. They're going to ask how you're doing. Doesn't say they're going to bow down. Again, if you're just not sure, the English, the end is, your brothers will bow down to you. So he really, you know, is, he's not translating word for word, you know, whatsoever. Lotus or Shevim, Yudamach, love, Pasuk, right? Tet 9, he'll be the ruler at the beginning and at the end. A king will be anointed from the house of Yehuda. So, Shilton Yehe, maybe again we have to read the, I should have put it closer. So, Posuk Tet, sorry. Gur Arye Yehuda, Miterf Benelit, that was about the power. Gur Arbat Karyeh Luchim Yichmenu, Lo Yasor Shevim Yehuda. So that talks about the scepter. So Pasuk 9 and 10, 9 was all about power. So if we again look in the Targum on that Pasuk, on Pasuk Ted, so he will be a ruler at the beginning. It's taking the lion and saying that metaphorically, you know, the lion and the power, and they say he'll be a ruler beginning and at the end, and a king will be anointed for the house of Yehuda. And then it continues, again, we're still in Pasuk Ted. For from the judgment of death, my son, you removed yourself. Just say, hold it a second. Where in the world did that come from? Let's look at again, Pasuk Tet in the Targum now. Shilton Yehe B'Shirutu V'Sofa Yitraba Malka Midibet Yehuda Are Midin Katla Berei Nafshach Silikta. You moved away from a capital case. So if you go back to Pasuk Tet one more time and say, yeah, that was clear. We saw that, you know, we saw that coming. The only problem is you don't see that coming. What does it say? Gor Ya Yehuda, Miterf Ben Yalita, Karar Vatzkar Yehu, Klavim Yikmenu. He just added in a clause into the pasuk, which we didn't know was there. And now you have to ask yourself again, which capital case did he move away from? Was this the capital case of that he said that Tamar should die because of her actions? Or is this that he saved Yosef? That Yosef, they determined, will die, and he changed it that it'll only be sold. So I can assure you that commentaries on the Targum take this in two different ways. If it's, this is absolutely remarkable, to say that Yehuda becomes Yehuda because of what happened in Tamar, especially here where he says, Satkami Meni, that's interesting. But to say that Yehuda becomes Yehuda because he stepped in, yes, Yosef perhaps deserved what's coming, but he doesn't deserve to be killed, and he moved away from a capital case. And if that's what it means, that for him saving you, none of us read it this way. None of us understood that Yehuda could possibly become Yehuda and king because he acted as a king. He acted as a ruler. This one shall live, this one shall die, and he saves Yosef's life. And I'll say it again, it's absolutely remarkable if that's what it means, but now you realize we're essentially in no man's land because we have no idea what it says even. But I want to come back to the wine part because I think that there's something there which is really interesting. And after that, we will try to wrap up a bit. And you're going to have lots and lots of homework. I gave you so much more to read here. So again, if Pasuk Tet was bad enough, he'll be a ruler, a king. The judgment moved away. He will rest and dwell in the strength of a lion like an awesome lion. There is no kingdom that can make him tremble. Again, all that stuff about the power, but it also threw in there about he moved himself from a judgment of death. The rod of the rule will not depart from Yehuda nor a scribe of his children forever until Mashiach will come. So it added in, Ad ki yavo Shiloh, it added in Mashiach. Now we have to come back to our wine psukim. He will bring Israel from all around to his city. The nation will build his temple. The righteous will congregate around the Mashiach, and those who engage in Torah study with him. And I hope that you're all looking at this and saying, well, where do you get that? May his garments be of fine purple cloth, and his clothes of fine wool colored in scarlet and other colors. His mountains will become red with vineyards. His wine press will be flowing with wine. His valley will appear white from the abundance of grain and sheep. Good. Look what he did with that other pasuk, talking about the clothes being laundered with wine. Did you all understand what just now happened? He's talking about the garments becoming fine purple cloth and fine clothes of wool colored in scarlet and other colors. That's really important. So can I explain to you what I think just now happened? Again, you want the English, what it actually says? His tethers just fall on the vine and bow his donkey's colt. Somehow he got everybody gathering together in Mashiach and the Beit HaMikdash and so on. He washes his clothing in wine and the blood of the grapes of his robe. So again, that's literally what it says. But he sees something else, and let me explain what he sees. What he sees is first of all, the colors are important. He's wearing purple and he's wearing kind of red and all kinds of scarlet and other colors. What is he wearing? And by the way, this is too easy. That's why you can't get it. What is he wearing? He's easy. Just the obvious thing that you have to say. He's wearing a coat of many colors. How easy was that? And of course, what you're saying to yourselves is, why did I think of that? Well, you didn't think of that because you want me to feel like you still need me. But that's what it says over here. Now, that's really interesting because you all know that when Yaakov gives to Yosef a coat of many colors, essentially what he's doing is that he is coronating Yosef as the man who will be king. And again, I don't want to work too hard now on the coat of many colors, but hopefully we all know that already. That the colors actually, the coat takes you in two directions. It could take you towards the Avoda and the Beit HaMikdash. Some things are made out of all kinds of interesting colors, but where this really takes you is to the children, the family of David HaMelech, who also have a Ketonet Pasim. But more specifically, what we know is that these are the colors that kings wear. I mean, I actually, much later on over here, found for you an interesting article about in historically, the color purple has been associated with royalty, power, wealth for centuries. In fact, Queen Elizabeth I forbade anyone except close members of the royal family to wear it. Purple's elite status stems from the rarity of the cost of dye originally used to produce it. And again, you have a lot more over here to read about this. And I also gave you a nice picture over here of the color of it, is that in the ancient Middle East, purple was a symbol of prestige, seduced dye of the royal color, and so on. And priest and royalty, and King David and Solomon, and so on. What Onkelos is reading into this is that this idea of doing laundry with wine and doing laundry, would you would think that makes no sense. It gets it dirty. No, it turns it purple. It turns it the color that a king is supposed to be wearing. But I wanted to go one step, and I purposely said it in a slightly different way. And what the way that I said it was that he gets a coat of many colors, which means what Yaakov is doing now is he's backtracking on what he gave to Yosef. He's giving Yosef something else. He gave Yosef wonderful blessings. He's giving Yosef even the status, which is a higher status of being a double tribe, which is the Bechor, and he gets two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh. But he's doing something else. He's kind of taking back from Yosef the coat of many colors, which I know you can tell me has long been destroyed and dipped in blood. But no, he's giving Yehuda that coat of many colors, and he's saying to Yehuda, you're the one who will be king. So it's interesting that, you know, Reuven loses something over here, and Reuven loses it. He's essentially left with nothing. But when Yosef loses it, Yaakov replaces that with something else, but he does take the coat, and he does take the malchut, and he gives it over to Yehuda, which, as I said, is interesting. Now, I'm leaving at this because what I did just now is much closer to pshat. Certainly, I think it's the way that Onkelos would have read it. What I did not do for you is reading through the Shloha HaKadosh on page 12. It's the Shloha HaKadosh on page, yeah. You can go through source 27, which is on page 7 and page 8 and page 9 and so on. And there's a lot that he says over here regarding Yosef and Yehuda and regarding the kingship and regarding the clothing and regarding the clothing of Malchut and what is taking place beneath the surface over here. And that concerns me less right now, beneath the surface. But again, just like I started today, when we have sections which are poetic, we look at Onkelos because Onkelos is interesting when it comes to poetic because he tells us what it means, even if it's not what it says. And over here, he did a couple of things which are really interesting because you can go back and look at the psukim and say, where did he get that from and how did he understand that? But over here, this point in terms of the clothing and doing laundry with wine on the clothing, instead of us focusing on, oh, that's not how you do laundry, so any housewife could have corrected Ibn Ezra over here, it wasn't a question of correcting the Ibn Ezra. It was understanding what the result would have been. And the result was producing royal clothing. And royal clothing is really what the Targum is telling us over here. And I'll say it again. It's how he understood the Psukim. But once you understand it of many colors, which he seems to say over there, then you also understand at least. And by the way, you don't have to agree with me that that's what the Ketonet Pasim is and that's what it means. There is some discussion over here. But if we do understand it in its broadest way, that the Ketonet Pasim is a coat of many colors, then it's very interesting because that seems to be exactly what Yaakov now has rescinded from Yosef, given over to Yehuda. And Yosef and Yehuda, you know, they win. They're the ones who walk away with the blessings. Binyamin as well, in terms of the Beit HaMikdash, Levi's going to have to do some work along the way. By the time we get to Devarim and, you know, do our comparisons, Yosef is still there. Yosef is still on this really interesting higher level. But as I said, Yehuda is the big winner in Bereshit. Right, surprise ending. Yehuda is the big winner. And Yehuda walks off with the kingship, and he walks off with Mashiach, and he walks off with the coat of many colors. So who would have thought, again, there was that point of that you were saved from a judgment of death. Who would have thought that, you know, as they rip off the coat and they dip it in blood and they send it to Yaakov, which should have been an incredible stain on them, who would have thought that Yehuda then ends up getting a coat of many colors afterwards as part of the blessing that Yaakov leaves him with, and eventually he will be the one to get the coat, and he will be the one to get the crown, and he will be the one to